Welcome to the Impact Equals podcast, in which we explore the impact investment industry, what it is, why it matters, and how it is playing a key role in reshaping how business is undertaken in many parts of the world. My name is Andrew Murray-Watson. My guest today is someone who sits at the epicenter of the burgeoning impact investment industry. Amit Bhuri, who joins us from New York, is the chief executive of the Global Impact Investing Network, commonly referred to as GIIN, where he leads the largest global community of impact investors dedicated to increasing the scale and effectiveness of impact investing. Amit co-founded the GIIN in 2009, following the launch of the Monitor Institute's Investing for Social and Environmental Impact, a landmark report which he helped to conceive and develop. His work would eventually lead to the growth of a global network around the concept of impact investing and provide a blueprint that would seed the GIIN's creation. Today, Amit works to engage industry leaders, institutional investors, foundations, and leading financial institutions all over the world to advocate for greater integration of social and environmental factors in all investment decisions, and to develop the tools and resources needed to effectively mobilize more capital towards impact investments. Amit has significant experience in both the for-profit and non-profit sectors, and previously held positions at Bain & Company, Elizabeth Glasser Pediatric AIDS Foundation, and with the corporate philanthropy units of Gap Inc. and Johnson & Johnson. Amit, welcome to the Impact Equals podcast. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thank you,
Andy. Firstly, let's start with you. Tell us about your personal background. What inspired you to co-found GIIN and focus on impact investing?
Well, sure. Thank you. I was born in California, the child of immigrants from India. And I was actually raised by a single mom from the age of just about three onward. I spent part of my childhood living on public assistance, what we call welfare in the United States, and then was able to have a tremendous number of educational and professional opportunities that I could only have dreamed of back at that time. Much of my work is motivated by giving opportunity to much broader swaths of the population. I hope that we can create a more inclusive society and one that's more sustainable. But I didn't have a plan to start the GIIN from the outset. I was really looking for a career that would give me an opportunity at the intersection of purpose and impact, as well as how the private sector and capital is connected to how we can improve the state of the world and make a more equitable society. The idea for the GIIN, though, came from a community of people spread all over the world who were interested in how they could use impact investment. We didn't have the language at the time. It was really how to use private capital to advance social and environmental progress. And so the work very much connects back to where I come from in many ways, although the specific ideas around the impact investing network that we've built at the GIIN came from a community of people who wanted to build something much bigger than themselves and their own organizations.
So back in 2009, when you founded the GIIN, you mentioned the community of individuals who supported the foundation. I mean, it must have been a fairly small organization, albeit with big ambitions. I mean, significantly, compared to now, certainly.
Well, it was incredibly small, and we did have big ambitions, but it was also a leap of faith in many ways. We had people who were approaching impact investing using very different language and honestly thinking about themselves as part of the same global community. So community investors in the United States, people involved in social finance in the UK, people doing micro-venture capital in places like India, folks supporting natural capital solutions in places like the Netherlands or Asia or beyond. But we had a bunch of like clusters or communities of people. And the vision of the GIIN and of the brand of impact investing was really to stitch together a broader architecture that would actually create space for all these different communities to connect to a bigger vision of how impact could be part of all investing. And certainly, there was a lot of work being done by the development finance community and a great interest in helping to engage with private investors. And so we saw many aligned agendas around a bigger vision, but it was completely ambitious. And as I mentioned, a leap of faith in many ways to actually think that we could succeed in not only building a brand that created room for so many different communities and approaches, but also a platform by which we could help promote impact investment to a much broader set of investors all over the world.
Yeah. So what were if you had this sort of patchwork of different interests and groups, what were the kind of forces at play that kind of ditched it all together into something under one umbrella?
Well, in many ways, people who are operating at this intersection of how to use investment to advance social or environmental progress were swimming against the current. The systems in the market was not set up to do that well at scale. So there's a high degree of like friction and transaction costs that they all had to incur to figure out things like what are different models for engaging with companies? You know, how do you embed things like impact measurement and the way you actually approach, you know, how you manage your portfolio? And there was a general understanding that this was critically important and it was too hard. Now, of course, you don't want it to be too easy because, you know, the work of advancing social progress is going to be difficult. But what we wanted people to be focused on was not things like how do we create the right definitions and measurements? How do we create the right models? How do we kind of figure out things that essentially could be figured out industry-wide? But instead, we wanted investors to be figuring out how they can put capital to work to have the greatest impacts possible. So the idea for the GIN was essentially to help create an industry, to create a global marketplace that would lift all boats, if you will, and allow capital to move at much greater scale with much more effectiveness around impact investing. And I think anyone around the world who is actively like a pioneer in this space could see that there was tremendous potential and tremendous need from a social and environmental perspective, but also that we needed something that actually created this as a high functioning, efficient marketplace. So there was less friction in the system for each of the individual investors and companies so they could thrive.
The size of the market now, the impact investment market, is $1.1 trillion, a staggering sum. Did you, when you set up the GIN in 2009, did you have any kind of forecasts or expectations of just how big it was going to get?
We didn't set out like an outright goal in terms of the capital. What we really aspired to do was, you know, to have investment play a role in actually moving the needle on social and environmental problems at scale. The market size now, you know, at $1.16 trillion is formidable. I think it's big enough for people to pay attention and for, you know, the skeptics to start taking this more seriously, which is happening. At the same time, it is nowhere nearly as big as it needs to be. You know, if we look at the Sustainable Development Goals or the achieving the Paris Climate Accords, we need to move much greater capital. So our sights are very much set ahead on the untapped potential we see in the market. And one thing I would underscore is that we actually see interest in impact investing just surging all over the world. There's great interest in Europe, in North America, but also in places like Latin America, Asia, you know, South Asia, Southeast Asia, East Asia, and beyond. And certainly there's great interest and need in places like Sub-Saharan Africa as well. So this is a time where the market has come a long way in terms of moving capital at a significant scale. But we also want to channel that momentum into greater growth and ultimately into greater results for people and the planet.
How does the GIN as an organization keep up with that accelerating flow of capital? I mean, that you must be dealing with an ever-increasing amount of stakeholders, different types of institutions coming to your door. That must in itself must be quite challenging from an organizational point of view.
It's both incredibly like exciting and exhilarating, as well as overwhelming. And so we are, we do our best at trying to engage stakeholders, and it's very much in our DNA in terms of how we work. We're a network. We're not like an institute or kind of a center, but very much are connected to a global community of practitioners. We have over 50,000 people who connect to our work. We have over 400 members, and I believe it's over 50 countries now that are formally part of our membership, and that continues to grow. And I feel like there's this tremendous untapped potential. What we really want to do, though, is really develop a global network. And what I mean by that is, there's, of course, how we interact with all the stakeholders that we work with. And we do so in a variety of ways. People who contribute to our research, people who support and use our impact measurement and management system, IRIS Plus, people who attend our events, participate in our membership, and so on. But ultimately, the power of a network is also in connecting the nodes to one another. And we work very hard to create new ways of engaging people so they can actually build connections. The theory there is that, of course, that information, capital, ideas, learnings can travel much more quickly around the world. Hopefully, if we're successful, accelerate collective learning. We can all become smarter and sharper in how we can actually use capital to best achieve impact for the people and the communities and the natural environment that we're trying to support.
And in terms of your mission to mainstream impact investing, can you give us a flavor of the conversations you're having with institutions and pension funds and others that are coming to your door interested in impact investment? What are the shape of those conversations?
Well, you know, I'll take the first part, around, mainstream impact investing for a moment and just talking about why that's important, because I do think it is a specific position. It may seem obvious to some, and others may find it concerning or curious. One of the things that we recognized around 10 years into our journey was that we had helped the market grow tremendously. And we talked about the figures and the scale of the market to date. But we also had this clear understanding of there was such a great need at a systemic level. So if you think about things like poverty around the world, or climate change, or ecological degradation, it wouldn't be sufficient for us to just grow the impact investing market as we define it, even to greater heights, say it doubles or triples over the coming years, which would be a huge success. But we actually need to think about how impact investing can shift the overall system. What role can it play in influencing how the mainstream markets operate? Because we can't, affect something like climate change, without shifting the way the overall markets operate. Because the issue itself is so systemic, we need to think about a systemic response. And so that's what really set us on the pivot around, thinking about how impact investing can help drive broader economic change, and how it can actually change the way the capital markets work more broadly, so that all investment is putting impact, at the center of how it's thinking about how, capital flows and how we understand success. Now, specifically with mainstream actors, it's been very interesting because we've always had some bigger institutions involved from the outset. Some big global banks, insurance companies, pension funds. But of course, it was, there weren't that many of them in the early days. What we've seen is actually a pretty strong kind of evolution of interest from mainstream institutional investors. Many of them were, kind of early to adopt things like ESG and sustainability, but also are now seeking not only how they think about ESG from a risk management standpoint, but how they can directly drive positive impact in the world. So they'll use language like, how can we advance sustainability outcomes? How can we contribute to the achievement of the SDGs? Or how do we invest in solutions? And essentially what they're speaking about is impact investing as we define it. Investments that are made to, with the intention of achieving positive, measurable social or environmental impact alongside a financial return. So the interest among institutional investors is growing. It brings up all kinds of questions, right? Because one of the things that comes up is how do you plug impact investing into an institutional operating environment? How does it fit within a mainstream financial institution? The good news, though, is that many larger institutions are already doing this and have been doing it for some time and actually are expanding their commitments to impact investment. So we see that there people who are interested in it now have great people to follow. There's great people to learn from, and that's where the network becomes so important.
It's really interesting. I mean, obviously the title of this podcast is Impact Equals, and there's nothing after the equals because all the people we're interviewing and speaking to have, to varying degrees, different answers. But one of your core missions is to fill in that blank after the equals, isn't it? To provide a kind of a unified, universal answer to how you measure impact. Is that the kind of the holy grail of the industry right now? Is that what you're basically tasked with?
I think it's an interesting way of thinking about it. And in some ways, I think that's right. I do want to say, when we're working on it, I think of us as the network and not just the organization of the gin, because, we tap into the expertise and knowledge and wisdom, people all over the world. And that's, I think, part of our, the magic of our work, or kind of secret ingredients, is really the engagement with stakeholders, really broadly. But ultimately, I think one of the things that's so important, that we emphasize at this moment in the world, where there are so many pledges around the Sustainable Development Goals or net zero, or, the Paris Climate Accords, yet we see so much need at a macro level, but also at a micro level, in communities, in families, to improve livelihoods and create more equity around the world, that we see a big part of our role in helping to translate all those good intentions and pledges into real results for people and for communities and for the planet. And you can think about all of our work playing a role in helping that process happen. So things like Iris Plus, which has now over 20,000 users around the world, and it's a great resource for investors, organized by theme or by sustainable development goal. So if you said we're trying to promote gender equity, you can identify the specific strategies and metrics you can use to measure your performance. Similarly, if you're focused on clean energy access or any number of themes that are really important to the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals. But it allows investors to start with an objective or a high-level goal and understand at a granular operational level, that interface that they have with companies, what should they actually be measuring to understand whether or not they're actually moving the needle on these big global goals. We've actually recently been pushing the frontier even further on this thinking. We launched what we call the GIN Impact Lab just late last year. And that we have a number of key partners, including Temasek, the EQT Foundation, as well as the Visa Foundation, alongside many other kind of members of ours who are active at helping that endeavor. And what we're aiming to do is actually to increase our sophistication around how we actually achieve impact. So essentially, how do we actually foster impact intelligence, if you will? But one of the core things that we're working on now is actually developing impact performance benchmarks. Tools that investors can use to actually understand the impact that they're having in the context of what's needed to achieve a sustainable development goal, but also what's relative to their peers, so that we can look at things like creating quality jobs, reaching women with responsible financial services, helping to extend the reach of clean energy to lower income populations, and understand what performance actually looks like relative to the broader market, which will help us actually, our hope is that it helps investors become sophisticated around what good investment looks like, but ultimately can drive a race to the top when it comes to impact. Because we know, most conventional investors wake up every day thinking about how they can get better financial returns for their clients or for their portfolios. I would love for investors in the future to be waking up every day thinking about how they can get sustainable financial returns, but also how they can drive greater impact performance for their stakeholders, including the ultimate beneficiaries of their investments.
Okay. And is that now happening largely organically in more and more institutions taking on board those considerations, or how much more a push is needed?
I think it's both are happening, but I think a big push is needed. So we do see a lot of inbound interest. People, I think investors increasingly are waking up to this potential, for their investment to have a positive impact on the world. So there's a great deal of curiosity amongst kind of employees of institutions, large and small, all over the world. And we do see that there's growing interest as there's greater social legitimacy around impact investing. As people see more global banks, big asset managers, like big institutional investors, insurance companies, pension funds, and beyond, move into the space, it actually helps drive more interest and more momentum amongst a broader set of investors. But we also can't be complacent and just wait for interest to generate organically. We feel a great need in our role to actually help spark demand and to drive greater interest around the world. And we do that through a lot of communications, through actually participating in podcasts like this, where we have people who are curious about these issues, but also engaging with mainstream media and events and conferences and beyond to help get the word out. Most investors still don't know that impact investing exists. So they're wealthy individuals and institutions all over the world are just like waking up to this tremendous opportunity. And so we have a great role, as the GIN, but also as our whole network and all the listeners, to this podcast, and helping to, raise awareness of the potential for impact investing and helping to drive kind of greater demand. The other thing I'd add to this, though, that we see a great part of our role is bringing rigor to the market. When it comes to things like how do you measure and manage your impact? And that's something that's, I think, a critical need because, again, going back to like all these great intentions, we want to make sure that we build a market that is rigorous about the actual achievement of impact results, about actually helping to do things like create more affordable housing, increase access to healthcare, help to support more sustainable forestry, and help support healthy ocean and beyond. And to do so, we need great rigor around the impact measurement and management that investors use.
Okay. Presumably, as well as coming up with very sophisticated, technically accurate ways of measuring impact, you also have to make it relatively straightforward for new players to adopt those benchmarks and so forth? I mean, you don't want to sort of create a bar that's so high it intimidates people.
The real challenge here is that you have to find that balance between a bar that is like meaningful, you know, that makes sure that impact actually means something that is credible. Because I think one of the things that is absolutely critical is that, you know, people are motivated by the potential of actually having an impact. So we have to make sure that the bar is high enough to make sure that's actually happening, because that's what will, I hope, like inspire hope and motivate more people to put more capital into impact investments. We can't, if this is seen as a PR marketing exercise or kind of like, you know, thin on the details, if you will, it'll be a huge tragedy, not just for the impact investing sector, but for the world, because, you know, people need, you know, more investment that is advancing equity and sustainability all over the
world. Do you think there are institutions that see it as a PR opportunity?
I think there's a great appeal for the brand of impact investing. And I'm sure there are folks who are attracted by the brand and whatever cachet that brand has. The way that we see our role in many ways, though, is helping to define the terms by which you can call yourself an impact investor and actually help to create, and we're not a regulator. We do inform how regulators are thinking about impact investing, but we also think there's a great power in the soft power of, you know, a global network of institutions who care deeply about impact investment, about the market they've built, and want to bring people in at, you know, a bar that is meaningful. But the second part that I think about your first question around, you know, we can't set the bar too high, is that I do think it needs to be high enough to be legitimate and to be credible and rigorous, but we also need to make it achievable in terms of the tools and resources that we provide. And that's part of the way that we see the role of the GIN. We support and host the Secretariat for the Impact Principles. We also have tools like Iris Plus, which are very much around the measures and the system by which you can manage your impact. And as I mentioned, we're also building benchmarks that are very usable by investors. And so we're building a whole suite of resources and tools that investors can use to actually operationalize those great intentions. And I think one thing that we want to do is make those kind of clear, user-friendly, but also make sure that they have the efficacy and fidelity that will make sure that we are realizing our potential to really making a meaningful difference in the lives of people around the world.
And where is all this money going? Where is it being invested?
Well, it's being invested all over the world. I mean, I think what we see is that impact investing, you know, is happening across six continents, and it continues to grow all over the world. Investors have very different orientations, though, in terms of how they build their own portfolios. So some are specific to a certain country, and that could be, you know, Americans investing in America. It could be Indians investing in India, and so on. But we also see, and what we try to advocate for, is that most investors who are actually, you know, would have a global portfolio in their traditional portfolios, think about how to build a globally diversified portfolio when it comes to impact investments. But I think right now, the allocation of capital, we see a lot of investors who are heavily weighted towards developed markets, which I think reflects what we see in the broader capital markets. But there's a great deal of interest in the Global South. So we see a lot of growth in impact investing throughout Asia. We continue to see a lot of interest in places like Sub-Saharan Africa and Latin America as well. But one of the ways that we think, particularly in this time of great global turmoil in the markets, we very much have our eye on how do we actually make sure that impact investing continues to flow to developing markets. Because I think in this interest rate environment and uncertain geopolitical environment, that's going to be a great need for continued focus.
That's really interesting. And just looking at the biggest picture, if you like, in terms of meeting the challenges of the climate emergency and the UN SDGs, where does impact investing fit in terms of the portfolio of potential solutions? Is it the biggest piece?
Well, where I think that impact investing fits in, I don't know if it'll be the biggest piece, especially if you think about something like climate change, you know, where there's a need to decarbonize everything. And so, you know, how people manufacture tables and cars and everything else, you know, we need to actually get the emissions down of all the processes upon which our global economy sits. And you know, wouldn't necessarily call that impact investment necessarily, but I think where we see, you know, impact investing playing a role is really in some ways like the tip of the spear, if you will. It is the intentional investments into things that are directly trying to move the needle on these issues. So take climate change for, in particular, we need to decarbonize airlines and, you know, kind of, you know, and transport and, you know, manufacturing and agriculture and all these other areas, where impact investing fits in is those investments that are directly into climate solutions. You know, how people can allocate capital into strategies that are directly trying to address the climate crisis in a concerted way. And I'll try to bring that to life. You know, this includes things like, you know, clean energy, you know, large scale, you know, clean energy, but also things like household solar, which are so important for places like rural Africa, India, and other parts of the world. It includes things like around, you know, nature-based solutions. So ways in which investors are thinking about more sustainable and regenerative agriculture, how we can actually, you know, build better ways of supporting forestry in a more sustainable way, and thinking about, you know, marine ecosystems, but also things like climate technologies, you know, things that are directly focused on bringing down emissions in a concerted way and having a climate positive impact, if you will, as opposed to just reducing harm, you know, to the planet. So impact investing plays a very critical role, but I do want to underscore it's all important. You know, we need a, you know, systemic response. And so I don't know that impact investing is more or less important, but it is essential. And it's an area that needs a lot more capital if we are going to achieve, you know, this, you know, the Paris Climate Accords or the Sustainable Development Goals.
How much more capital? It says 1.16 trillion on your website today. What do you want it to say next year, the year after that?
You know, my ultimate goal, because, you know, the goalposts will move around a little bit. You know, we hear the UN estimate things like 3 to 5 trillion are needed a year for things like, you know, achieving the Sustainable Development Goal. That's a big range. I mean, we've seen other ranges that are put out by, you know, kind of global think tanks and advocates. But so the way that we actually measure our end game is not by kind of the dollar amount or the, you know, or the euros or the rupees, you know, that we're counting, you know, towards this bigger vision, but actually in the way in which the capital markets work. You know, ultimately, we want impact to become part of all investing. You know, instead of being, you know, impact investing as this, you know, really exciting kind of emergent area, we want all investors to be thinking about their impact, where it becomes the new business as usual. Now, not everything needs to qualify as an impact investment the way that we define it, but we want impact thinking to infuse the way that investors operate. So it'd be natural for people making any type of investment to think about what's the impact on people. You know, whether it's from an employment standpoint, are they creating quality jobs, you know, helping to create economic opportunity and social mobility? Are they serving kind of the entire market, you know, so that all people are included in the types of products and services that are being offered, you know, whether it's healthcare, housing, and beyond? And that, you know, we think when we think about things like success, that includes financial performance and impact performance, you know, that's a way that which we actually think about what good investing looks like. Which I realize is like a conceptual thing, but it is, you know, for us, we are really trying to inspire shift in the way that the overall markets operate. And we see impact investing as a, you know, a way of, you know, helping to drive that shift along many other kind of, you know, colleagues around the world. We're helping to make, you know, build an economic system that is truly sustainable, that is equitable, that it, and that ultimately helps regenerate, you know, our social and environmental systems.
We're asking all our guests the same question. What are some of the kind of the biggest two or three trends that you're seeing in the industry that will shape the industry over the next few years?
Well, one of the big trends, I think, is that there is, we see an evolution from, you know, investors who are thinking about kind of ESG and sustainability to also kind of push their thinking deeper into how they actually help advance progress towards the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals. And so, you know, there is, I think people are pushing for more. And we see, when I say people, we see this from larger institutional investors who have been committed to sustainability for some time, but are actually trying to move the needle in a much, you know, kind of deeper way. And that, I think, has, you know, a tremendous potential for where the market goes. The second big trend I see is actually generational. We are now seeing younger generations, and they don't even have to be that young at this point. So I'm not just talking about children in school, but actually, you know, kind of working professionals, you know, the 20s, 30s, and 40s, who are actually expecting their companies, whether they're investment firms or, you know, corporates or small businesses, to actually be playing a role in helping to address the social and environmental problems they see in the world around them. You know, we're seeing this around climate, we're seeing this around racial equity, we're seeing this, you know, increasingly around, you know, how do we think about things like climate justice around the world? And so there's the mandate for business and for the private sector is shifting. you know, the expectations of what it means to run a good business or to run a good investment firm is evolving to where impact is becoming a much bigger area of emphasis and will be needed, you know, both to attract good talent, to motivate great talent, you know, to think about how do you actually build the right relationships with customers and other stakeholders and clients, I should say. And so I think that's another mega trend, and we're seeing it fairly consistently around the world based on a number of surveys that have been conducted. The third area, you know, is the role of technology and what we're seeing. And I think that's where we see technology playing a tremendous role in helping to extend, you know, services and products to broader communities. So things like, you know, technology is playing a role in financial inclusion in agriculture, you know, helping rural farmers stay connected to kind of what's happening in markets and help them to, you know, to play more effective roles in helping to achieve greater yields, you know, for their companies and for their workers. We see in areas like healthcare and beyond. And so I think technology continues to play an evolving role. And of course, with the emergence of AI in a much more accessible way, we're just getting our arms around what that might mean for the impact investment space and for the communities that we're trying to support around the world.
For our listeners to this podcast who might be interested in contributing in a more active way to generating impact, what would you say to them?
Well, I think if you're tuning in to this podcast, it means that you care and you're interested. And then this may already be part of your career, maybe something that you aspire to do. But what I would really underscore is that everyone has a role to play, fostering our vision, you know, for a society and for an economy that works for all people and for the planet. What I would really advocate for is, regardless of where you sit, to think about how impact investing can play a role in your personal portfolios, even if they're incredibly modest, or in your professional ones. For people thinking as individuals, even if modest means, where you bank is a very intentional choice around, you know, because your banks, you know, your checking and savings accounts are investments that banks use to on-lend to companies. That can play a very powerful role in helping to build like lower income businesses in distressed areas, you know, lend to kind of, you know, green businesses that are helping to address the climate change and very directly. And so, or if you have more sophisticated portfolios, if you have the means in which you can, you're investing in the stock market and other areas, to really think about and do some work on how your own assets can be activated for a positive impact. And for those who are professional investors or working at big corporates, your financial assets can play a very active role in helping to shape a better world for current and future generations. And so please, we have a wealth of resources on our website. We have research. We have tools like Iris Plus. We have all kinds of guides, and case studies and whatnot. And so I think see the GIN as a resource for you. You can also attend to our events and get involved in other ways if you'd like. But even if you're just getting started and getting up to speed, we have a lot of content that's great for people new to impact investing. And you can see all kinds of information about great kind of partners and members of ours, including BII and others who are doing great work to help lead the market forward.
Aaron Bory, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a really fascinating conversation. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until next time.
Thank you.